You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
The New Yorker calling the L word, quote, truly idiotic.
Yes.
Is like, I want a tattoo of that.
Yes.
Like, it is so vicious and so accurate. And like, moments of it are truly idiotic.
I'm diking out, you're diking out. Let's dike out together. See what it's all about.
Diking out, diking out, diking out, diking out.
Hi, and welcome to Diking Out, a podcast that is already feeling prided out. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
I'm Melody Kamali, and today we are diking out with Grace Perry about the gay 2000s, which sounds pretty fetch to me.
That's hot.
That's hot.
We're going to get so crunk on this episode. I can't wait.
Yes.
We have a bunch of shows coming up that we want to tell you about, some that will be in person, some that will be online, some that might be both in person and online. So we already mentioned June 26th after the Dyke March. We have a show at Good Judy in Brooklyn. Tickets should go on sale this week. As we mentioned, we're going to release them to our patrons first, and then if there's any left over, we'll put them to the general public because it's a smaller space than we're used to, and, you know, pandemic, COVID, safety, you have to be vaccinated, all that good stuff. On the lineup, we have past guests like Lindsay Bowling, Ashley Ray, Julia Shiplett. It's going to be so much fun. And, of course, your co-hosts with the mo-hosts.
Uh-oh.
Also on June 30th, we're going to be judging a cocktail competition for Jägermeister and Yelp, and that's going to be broadcast online.
Yep. Proceeds will go to the Lesbian Bar Project. We will be mixing predetermined cocktails and judging them and getting paid to do it.
It's a beautiful thing. Yeah.
The dream.
These are the pride events that I am okay with.
Proud to do that.
Please give us money to get tipsy. We like it.
We love it.
Another show that we're doing, speaking of the Lesbian Bar Project, you know, they're in their second round of funding right now. They had a very successful first round, and their documentary is out. Reminder, if you haven't watched it, you can watch it for free at their website. To kind of cap off and rally at the end of this second fundraising leg, July 1st. Can you believe it, Melody? We're back at Stonewall.
I cannot.
for the Lesbian Bar Project. We're going to be raising money for them. We're going to be putting on a show. It's going to be a lot of fun. Again, you need to be vaccinated. We'll keep you posted on tickets. We are figuring out the details right now. It's all coming together. We need to get our lineup and everything, but we do know it's going to be a blast. And
this much I know is true. It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah.
We're going to be indoors doing comedy.
In July. It won't even be Pride Month. Can you believe it? We're doing a gay show outside of Pride Month. So shows on shows on shows. I'm so excited. Oh, and for anybody who's in Queens, I'm going to be doing a show at QED. So look on my Instagram for that. And this is going to be my first show that I'm on that I'm not hosting. Like my first real comedy show since the pandemic that's not a Zoom show. So it's at QED. This Thursday, the 17th in Queens at QED. I will be there performing. I think the show is at 7, but just look on my Instagram and I'll be posting details.
Oh, interesting. And you've got dueling shows from co-host that night. If you're in Brooklyn and you want to see me.
Queens versus Brooklyn.
No, you guys can go see Carolyn. I'm rusty getting back out there. Yeah, skip it.
No.
Skip it.
Brooklyn Dykes, go see Melody. Queens Dykes, come see me.
Mm-hmm. Blinkies, Thursday night, the 17th. We're back, baby.
I'm willing to share the listeners. I'm willing to share the fans, Melody. I know nobody from Brooklyn is coming to Queens.
Yeah, that's true.
Not that much has changed. People in Brooklyn still aren't going to Queens post-pandemic, even though you should. QED is a wonderful place that needs to be supported. All right, Melody, what's the gayest thing you did this week?
I mean, so much to choose from. We're mid-June. Like, what do I even pick? Is it my real L Word rewatch? Because that felt really gay. But you know something even gayer did happen? I went to a raffle fundraiser event for the Dyke March.
Nice.
Dyking Out contributed to it. And so it was interesting. I got to walk around. There was like a hour and a half of like drinks and getting your raffle tickets and kind of putting them into little buckets under what it was. So I got to see how many people were interested in coming to our show. That's what we raffled off two tickets to our show, which will be after the Dyke March.
Was it a hot ticket?
Yeah, not the hottest. I mean, but also the hottest was like an Alison Bechdel, like original print.
Okay, but we can't compete with that.
You can't.
That's fine.
Lindsay Bowling, I went with, she won just the mother load. Lesbian Herstory Archives donated all these used sapphic books with like notes in them.
Wow.
Three tote bags from Lesbian Herstory Archives.
Totes.
T-shirts. She gave me one. They gave her so many totes.
Wow.
That was great. So I was happy just getting a tote from her lot that she won. I wasn't expecting to win anything.
Right.
Until they called my ticket for a motorcycle ride at the Dyke March.
Wow.
I'm going on the back of a Dyke's motorcycle from the Sirens Motorcycle Club. I mean, I've been instructed to wear pants that day so I don't get exhaust burns. Like, that alone made me excited.
Wow.
Like, just that little caveat.
Melody?
That made it so exciting. I was like, oh, it's on. Potentially dangerous? This is huge.
I am both thrilled and devastated because this was going to be our first Dyke March marching together.
I know.
And you instead are doing one of the most coveted things to do. It's really hard to get one of the rides on the back of these motorcycles. And you are.
They lead the march.
Making the right choice.
Yeah, it was tough. I was going to actually tell them they could give it away because I wanted to march with everyone. And then Allie was like, wait, what? Like, and then
Allie can march with me as a consolation.
I actually decided everyone needs to get there early and march
right
directly behind the motorcycle.
And
so
breathe in
I
the
can
fumes. Yeah.
Have it all.
That's
it can
what
be
I
all
want.
About
yeah.
Me.
I'll come with my earplugs and my,
hey, The gals from Lesbian Bar Project said they would.
My mask. Yeah.
Yeah, double mask for the exhaust fumes.
I have a gas mask and earplugs, and I can't wait to do it. I'm going to get some roller skates, and then you're just going to pull me on a rope behind
you. I know. Please, though, can everyone just kind of march towards the front? I can't turn this down, right?
You can't turn it down. This is glorious.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you're going to, what are you going to do? Like, you don't know the person.
I don't know who I'm riding with yet. I know who I've been emailing with, but I think it's just like the president of the club.
So you're going to get on the back of this motorcycle and just be like whispering secrets into their ear the whole time? Like, how does that work?
Yeah.
Are you going to be doing just hanging out?
I don't know, but who I'm emailing with people from the Sirens. It's the Sirens Women's Motorcycle Club of New York City. Just check them out. I did a lot of research on them. It seems like an amazing organization. They would lead like regular pride marches. They're fantastic.
Amazing.
They all have like dyke in their email signatures. So I'm so excited.
Great. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Totally the gayest thing. Totally.
That's the gayest thing.
The gayest thing. Yeah.
Yeah. What about you?
You forgot to mention our very generous donation to the Dyke March.
Oh, yes.
That we made.
We made a $1,000 donation.
Using none of our money.
None of our money, but on behalf of Dyking Out and our sponsor, Maker's Mark.
Yes.
Shout out to Chelsea Melvin from Maker's Mark.
Hooked
it up, and I had no idea. Just like whispered to me, like, tell them you're going to donate $1,000. And I was like, that's sexy.
I love it. Chelsea, thank you so much. And love our partnership that we have with Makers and that we are able to support the Dyke March that way. That's great. $1,000 to help make sure that everyone is safe, that everything is organized, mm-hmm. that everything runs the way that it should. And if you're in New York or plan on being in New York for the Dyke March, make sure you're following them on Instagram for all the details and maybe ways to get involved.
There are Dyke Marches in not just New York.
Right.
DC Dyke March, isn't there? Chicago. There. So just look up
Find your local Dyke March and get planning.
Mm-hmm. Well, Carolyn, what's the gayest thing you did this week?
It's very triggering, Melody, because the gayest thing I did this week was with my dear wife, Cecilia, and it was our attempt to humanely evict the raccoons that moved in under our bedroom. Where do I start? I know.
Yeah.
Midnight, Friday night, in bed. All of a sudden, we hear the sound of a wild animal. We don't know what it is. It sounds like it's outside. But then we hear it move from one side of the room to the other. And then are wondering, is it inside? Because that's what it sounds like. So it's pitch black.
Ew.
We hear this distress call from not just a raccoon, a baby raccoon, a kit, aww, multiple kits we learn. It was a mom and three kits found their way under our house. We don't have a basement or anything. It's like a very small crawl space that a human can't really access by the time it gets under our bedroom. So we didn't know what to do. You could hear them. They were scratching the shit out of things. Thankfully, there's no electrical under there because raccoons are known to chew through electrical and start house fires, start electrical
fires. That's
what
you
want. Way. Yeah. So a very chill time with these raccoons, hearing them terrorize us. But what are we to do to get rid of them? Because we don't want to kill them. We don't want to separate the mom from the kids. We're going to do it humanely, like the good lesbians we are, respecting that mom. So we just tried to be really bad roommates. That involved, you know, on the hour during the day, just stomping around my floor, doing jumping jacks, you know, making it not a comfy place for them to sleep. We set up a raccoon watch. So we have all these solar outdoor lights and we position them all at the opening of where the raccoon was getting in and out. And we figured out the mom's schedule for what time she came out. We played on YouTube channels of dogs barking just to scare them a little bit and try to get them to think like, this isn't a great place to live. And we got into a routine of doing this every day. Didn't think I was going to have to devote so many hours. We sprinkled Epsom salts around and it was cute. Okay, the raccoon would come out. It was a huge.
Is that why it's gay?
That we thought it was cute. That Cecilia
that
got
you guys
attached.
Kept stopping. Yeah, I was waiting for Cecilia's.
Cecilia
part in this.
Got attached. You know, Cecilia has been living like a Disney princess with all the animals on her property. If you follow her on Instagram, ceci.bergier, you will see that she's constantly posting about all the animals on her property. She also gives them all names. And it's not a fairy tale, though, when they're living under your bedroom, let me tell you. And at first she was like, how the hell did they get in under our floor? I'm like, well, maybe if you weren't giving them names, they wouldn't feel so at home here. Maybe they're feeling a little bit too comfortable on our property and we need to be a little bit more unwelcoming.
Yeah, it's the energy she's putting out.
It is.
Too welcoming.
It is, because she's really witchy.
She's
and then
summoning him. Yeah.
The things that she wants happens. So mm-hmm. she wants there to be as many animals as possible on the property. And then we have raccoons nesting under us. So we were watching, and it was a mom with the three kits. And the baby raccoons, they're very cute. It was very cute to watch. And then Cecilia got very emotional and was like, maybe they can stay. I'm like, no, because one day we're going to be walking on our floor and it's just going to collapse because they have ruined the structural integrity, or they're going to climb into the wall somehow. Like, we can't abide by this. So I'm happy to report that our friends, There Is No Mountain, the people who sing our theme song, the amazing humans, they came and fixed everything wrong in my life. They didn't even do anything. I think their presence just put out, you know, this thing into the atmosphere that was like, raccoons, it's your time to go. And the one night that they stayed over at our place, the raccoons left. They are gone. We sealed off the entrance. It's done.
Congratulations.
Thank you. You know firsthand that this has been stressing me out.
This has been interfering with our recordings, meetings, like...
Yeah, I'll be doing something and then all of a sudden I hear like all this noise, and it was like a psychological torture for me. The noise, it's very menacing.
It's menacing, and then just knowing that they have opposable thumbs.
Yes.
On top of it.
Yes, knowing how smart they are and what they can do and not knowing what's going to happen next. I was looking online and it was like, let them stay until fall. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, hell. The first thing I said when I realized that they were under the floor, I was like, we're selling the house. That's it. I can't do this. But it's fine. It all worked out. So we're staying here.
Okay.
Raccoon Saga 2021 in the books.
Over.
So I guess it's time to dike out. With our guest for this week, Los Angeles-based writer Grace Perry. We're diking out about the gay 2000s. You've seen her work on The Onion and Reductress. I'm sure you've shared many an article and headline. And now she has a book out called The 2000s Made Me Gay. Let's get to it. Grace, thank you so much for being here and diking out with us today. How are you?
I am so good, and I'm so thrilled to dike out.
Yes.
I've been waiting so long to dike out.
I know. Finally. I know. I've had my eye on you. Well, for your Reductress pieces, but also since you came out with the podcast, Who Killed Jenny Schechter? And I was obsessed. And
oh my God, I'm so glad. I feel like 10 people listened to that podcast.
Yeah, I was one of them.
Very, very fun. Good. Okay, great. Yeah, it was me and my friend Aaron Sullivan, who is like an Autostraddle Twitter person. And we had this idea obviously, like, at, like, you know, some queer dance night or something, where, like, we have to do a Jenny Schechter true crime podcast.
Right.
So I'm glad that you liked it. Yeah, it was super fun to work on. And that's how I know Tien.
Amazing.
She did a voice.
Amazing. Yeah. Past guest Tien Tran. Yeah, it was right before Generation Q came out that podcast dropped. And then how disappointed were you when they revealed what actually happened to Jenny Schechter?
Okay, so I'm going to be honest. I didn't watch all of Generation
Q. Oh, that's fine.
Because I was just, okay.
But do you know?
It was that it was
a,
like,
suicide.
Was it suicide? Yeah.
She suicided herself in Bette's pool.
Yeah. It's after all this time. Like, they clearly wanted so badly to, like, make us spin-off
The Farm,
series,
yeah.
Because they had, like, the Alice
The Farm,
jail.
Yeah.
Yes, the Farm, of course.
Right.
And I think Eileen probably really wanted it to go somewhere else, and they're just like, it was a suicide, but let's move on.
Right. And what's crazy, though, is I thought the way that they kind of brought it up when Bette talks about it, that maybe there'd be, like, some more mention of it along the way, because I was like, there's no way they're just leaving it.
That's
like
just a
that.
Sentence, yeah.
And
is
they
that,
did.
Is that what they
and
do?
They're pretending, they're just pretending Jenny never existed, to the point where it's like Shane opens this bar and they call it Dana's, when Dana was, like, really mean to Shane. They weren't really friends, and Shane and Jenny were, like, roommates and lovers. Like, wouldn't she have called it Jenny's?
Okay, did not finish.
Yeah.
Thank you, because I was like, this is boring.
I hope you don't mind these spoilers.
I'm livid. But, oh my God, I never put together, obviously I knew about the Dana's thing.
Yeah.
Because they shot that at a bar in my old neighborhood, which is now doing, like, a, like, Dana's night, or they were, like, starting to do that, and then COVID happened, so they didn't actually do it. But hopefully that'll start up again. I never put together that, like, they're, like, clearly memorializing Dana and then are just like, fuck Jenny Schechter, which, like, that, okay. I will say that, like, mentioning Jenny's death one time and then moving on and, like, giving, like, no actual explanation is actually the most L-word thing you could do.
Right.
Like, just having it make, like, absolute, like, nonsensical plot and just kind of arbitrarily deciding, like, who, what matters and what doesn't. And
right.
Yeah. Like that, of course, like, that is the spirit of the
after one whole season of Who Killed Jenny Schechter, one season that was so focused on it. They bring in Xena Warrior Princess to solve the crime.
Yeah.
And she would have known right away if it was a suicide. You know, Jenny would have had rocks in her pockets.
Okay. Just I know never. We
can... Yeah. Melody, go ahead. I know you have more important things to say.
Before we get into all of that, Grace, we do need to ask you, what is the gayest thing you did this week? Aside from this little L-word conversation. Yeah.
The past 5 minutes are the gayest thing I did this week. Actually, that is not even true. The gayest thing I did this week, the easy answer is that my book, The 2000s Made Me Gay, came out this week. So, like, releasing that and doing those book events have all been, I've been, like, very much talking about gay stuff all week. But also going surfing with my girlfriend this morning.
Yes!
Just a very nice gay outing. So, you know, it's our
so
little,
you can just,
our little gay hobby that we have together. And sometimes we see dolphins.
You can just do a class and pick it up. And
love it.
How do you get into it?
pick it up is generous. we took a few lessons with an instructor, and we took, like, five, and then we were like, we just have to go flap our little wings now. So we finally bought wetsuits. We're gonna get we have, like, crappy foam boards right now, but we're gonna get real boards, and we're just the only way to, like,
yeah.
It's just one of those things that you just have to do it a lot to get better at it. So we are like, okay, we have decided that we are, like, committing ourselves to this lifestyle, and I'm not very good. So I'll update you when I'm actually really shredding, et cetera. But no, it's like such a nice way to, I mean, I live so fucking far from the beach, but, like, it's great to have an excuse to, like, get out there and be like, oh yeah, I do live in California. Like, I'm
right.
Just, like, in this little neighborhood in the basically in the desert.
Where do you go to surf?
We went down to kind of like south.
Oh, cool.
We were in, like, Redondo Beach. Okay. But anything that is like Manhattan Beach, haven't gone all the way down to Orange County yet, though apparently there are some good beaches down there. I'm just learning the lingo. Yeah. I'm a baby. It feels so good to be like bad at something and not really care about getting good at it. You know what I mean?
That's like, how I felt about like tennis.
Yeah.
I took tennis lessons and I didn't stick with it. I wasn't that good at it, but I didn't care. It was just like, I just thought it was something that I should do and try.
Yeah, no, it's great to be like, I'm 31. I know that I'm not gonna like, I don't know. It's like, I feel like there's that when you're in your like teens and early 20s, you're like, I could magically be really good at something and I just haven't discovered what that is yet.
Right.
And, like, trying different things and then like none of those things actually work out. But like, I think once I like, maybe after, once I reached like 25 or 26 or something, I was like, oh, that's, I actually have to work hard to like make things that I want happen. Like I'm not like,
right.
magic like that. And yeah. So with this, it's like, I'm just like, yeah, I'm not going to like be a great surfer. Like that's not my life. I can just kind of do it and have fun. And, once again, I yes. must emphasize occasionally see dolphins, but it feels, yeah, it feels really good. Melody, is there anything that, have you done anything that's like a hobby? I don't know. Like, I feel like quarantine hobbies for people.
What did we say my quarantine hobby was recently? Oh, starting the rumor about Ellen DeGeneres. And it was a joke. it was a joke.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
No, I do want to get back into snowboarding. I was a snowboarder as a kid and then moved to Chicago, where you're from. Spent like all my 20s there and then, yeah, stopped. I still have my snowboard. I want to get back into it. That's going to be like my surfing.
I'm slightly older than the two of you, but when you mentioned the one thing when you're a teen and you're like, oh yeah, I could easily get into that. Was it a universal thing where we all thought we'd be good at extreme rollerblading? Or is that just me? Like when the extreme sports kind of became a thing and I was like, well, I have rollerblades. I can just like go down a rail.
Was it like, were you heavily influenced by the Disney Channel original?
Yes.
Brink?
Soul Skaters. Yes.
He very lesbian.
Eric
vibes.
Von Detten is a lesbian crush. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Very like also like young Leo, like the long
yeah.
hair.
Maybe it kinda. Was that. I forgot about that. No, I felt like I was just inspired by like MTV had shows like Battle of the Sexes, but they also just had all these different things going on and they would have a focus on these extreme sports and somehow that fit in with music television, maybe with like the whole punk scene, punk
yeah,
pop.
There's totally like that was very, I feel like the, you know, like this, not that I was like in the skating scene, like this is literally me. I'm basing this off of like playing Tony Hawk Pro Skater for Nintendo 64.
Right.
But, like, I'm like, oh yeah. Like the like punk scene is very like skater and music all kind of like intermixing.
Yeah.
Like, at least that's what it was. On
all of it. So. Like the right. finger skateboarding, like it was just like the culture. Do you remember those? What were they called? The
death. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I like that. My heart just like stopped at the thought of like the little finger.
Yeah.
Skateboard.
Like we all wore like PacSun, like Etnies shoes. Didn't matter if we actually skate. It was, that was just the style. Yeah.
The aesthetic. The aesthetic was strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I got excited when you said surfing. Cause Blue Crush, was the 2000s movie that made me gay.
Right.
That is,
right.
That's a big one. Yes. Like, I don't think that like I definitely have know a lot of people who have said the same thing and like, I don't know. It just didn't hit me in the same way. Or maybe I didn't see it until I was like out of my teens or something. But yes, that is like definitely a gay cultural touchstone, I think, for a lot of people.
For sure. Yeah, we hear that a lot. Well, okay, before we jump into talking Battle of the Sexes, MTV, and the many other things that are in your book, The 2000s Made Me Gay, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background.
Okay, well, I'm a Scorpio sun. I grew up in Chicago. I went to school on the East Coast, lived in New York for a little bit, then lived in Chicago again in my 20s, and then I moved out to LA a few years ago. So kind of making my way west, you know, so hopefully next will be Honolulu if I get
yeah.
to be a really good surfer.
Right.
Yeah, I'm a freelance writer, journalist. I wrote a lot for Reductress. I've written headlines for The Onion. I've written essays and stuff that have been several places on the internet that you can Google yourselves. And yeah, I wrote this book. it started out, the 2000s Made Me Gay started out with just kind of, I was reading an essay about I Kissed a Girl by Katy Perry. And it started, I wrote that in 2018. And the idea was to like pitch that around as like a 10-year retrospective on the song, because I was like, this fucked me up in certain ways. And here's how. and you know, not in a way to like, I don't know, not the way that's like, well, looking back, this is really fucked up, because like that take is so boring to me.
Right.
But it's like, I love this and it fucked me up. Like, how did those things coexist? I either didn't pitch it or it didn't get picked up anywhere. I don't remember what really happened, but essentially then I was like, oh, I can do this same thing with a bunch of different other like pieces of entertainment during this decade. Like, I can see how I can track, like, I, you know, being really into, yeah, like MTV Battle of the Sexes. Like, what was going on there? Why was I so obsessed with MTV's Battle of the Sexes? Same with like the OC and Harry Potter and all these like very big popular, you know, pop culture, big entertainment things that I think, you know, I can really trace like the particular ways in which I came of age during kind of a weird era, pre-Glee, you know?
Right.
So that's how it came together.
Yeah, when reading it, it made me think, because I'll be aware of the things in my formative years that I'm like, oh yeah, I was really obsessed with that. And obviously, because it's kind of queer baity, or this was my route or that. But your book goes into it and makes these connections that are kind of unexpected. It goes just beyond like, well, this seemed queer, so, you know, like Taylor Swift, that it wasn't so much that you were fantasizing about her being queer. It was about the way that she wrote about love, or the idea of love and romance and stuff. So I was kind of wondering, like, how long has this been brewing? It feels like these connections, you'd have to have a lot of therapy sessions where you really dig into all these pop cultural things to get to it. Cause I'm like, this is like very evolved analysis of pop culture.
Oh, well, that's very nice of you to say. And I'm glad that it came across as not like super predictable.
Not predictable. Yeah.
But I don't, honestly, I think that they're all for the most part, like the Taylor Swift thing in particular. So like in the book, I have an essay about Fearless, which came out in 2009, and really feeling connected with her as like kind of like lonely, inexperienced teenage girl who doesn't really have any real life experience to go off. So is just like fantasizing about things all the time. And like, to me, Taylor Swift's music, especially the really early stuff, is so, it's so fantasy driven. Right. And like when you're queer, and you're not out or whatever, like you really rely on those fantasies a lot, I'll just say.
Right.
But yeah, so for that, for example, is something that I feel like I have like always just like understood about like why I'm, because I'm like, I don't love, especially with that album, it's like, I didn't love country music. I didn't, you know, and like, you know, then she moved into pop. So like, of course I love pop music. I don't know. That one in particular feels like something that I just kind of always knew. I think for most of the book, it was a lot of things that I just kind of had bopping around in my head for a long time. Like, it sort of all made sense to me. I'm somebody who, like, I think about pop culture a lot. I write about it. I revisit things that I liked as a teenager from time to time. And I still feel, like, pretty in touch with that entertainment in a way. So I think it was still kind of, yeah, bopping around my head. So actually, you know, yes, I have done a lot of therapy, but that's not what was driving the book necessarily.
I mean, it made me think I needed to get in therapy just because we are the same age, and there are just so many parallels in how we ingested this media and the effect it had on us, especially the Mean Girls essay in, tracking Lindsay Lohan's spiral and the way it was like tied in with queerness and Samantha Ronson, like just like so many things that I just was on a surface level taking in, but in hindsight and realizing were problematic, but not in a just like that was problematic. Like you say in the book, hindsight criticism is too easy to be interesting. Like, I love how you went in and made really nuanced comparisons that I really think I needed to read in your book, because I had just like buried. Like, it was a really weird decade to be a young queer person repressing missing a lot of that. And I think I just coasted into the 2010s and was like, I'll deal with that later. And it turns out it was until I read your book. Like, there are so many things I just hadn't even let myself think about until I read the book.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, what was weird, like, with the Mean Girls thing was, like, as I wrote about in the essay, like, I loved, like, Mean Girls was, like, such, felt, like, so personal to me. Not because it was anything that, like, I had really experienced, like, that kind of, like, plot-wise anything. But just because, like, I loved the comedy in it. I loved the humor in it. It felt like it was, like, just smarter than me because it came out when I was, like, 14. And because it's you know, it's a PG-13 movie, but it's also really funny for adults. Like, it's not geared towards teenagers necessarily. Like, it's Tina Fey. Like, she's amazing. And yeah, it felt like it was just out of my comfort zone, and I liked that. And so it was weird going back and watching it again, like, as I was kind of putting my ideas for this book together, because I think I was going to, like, make the essay more about Lindsay Lohan as a person, but, like, realizing that, like, the main crux of, like, so much of the drama in Mean Girls is that, like, Regina called Jay-Z and a dyke, and that was too mean. Like, it wasn't that it was like, hey, Regina, it's fucked up that you're using gay slurs, like, or it's not like Janice being like, yeah, fuck you, maybe I am a dyke, like, whatever, like, you know, which it was that Janice is seeking revenge on Regina George because Regina George was so cruel enough to, like,
right,
suggest that Janice,
like, the ultimate offense.
Yeah. And that, I was like, oh, that is really, there's, like, this, you know, a lot of homophobia baked into that. Like, that in, like, a really, really insidious way. And I think that, like, especially, like, you know, and Damien being such, like, a great, like, out, funny, gay character, you know, there was, I just took away this idea of, like, oh, it's cool for guys to be gay, and it's cool to be friends with gay guys. But, like, you, if you're a lesbian, you're not going to get invited to,
like, you're a predator,
and, like, because, like, that's creepy. Yeah, exactly. So that was just, like, really baked into me, I think, because literally just because I watched that movie, like, three times a week or whatever, for
memorized. Yeah, every word, was obsessed with it. Didn't watch it for years and years, and then actually in quarantine a few months back, rewatched it, and just even the dyke comment just, like, cut to me in a way it hadn't when I would watch it when I was younger and closeted. Like, just hurt me so much more as an out, like, woman.
Yeah, like, when you're watching it, you're just like, yeah, she is a dyke. Ew. Yeah.
They now edit it when they show it on TV and they say freak instead, just so you know.
Oh, my God.
Thank you so much.
Way.
Totally different movie. Like,
yeah. But then also, like, it's not just the Burn Book thing. It's like the, like, there's the whole conversation about how, what Regina explained. So that just makes
girls
sense.
Girls in bathing suits. Whatever. Yeah.
Tina Fey has, there's a lot of, I mean, as also somebody who has watched 30 Rock all the way through upwards of 50 times. Like,
right.
There's a lot of not loving queer women in the work of Tina Fey, which is tough to stomach as somebody who also loves her work so much.
We are both 30 Rock people, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, good. We're safe with each other.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Do you like science fiction? I'm Carrie Bechet, and if you loved movies like Arrival or Interstellar, then you're going to want to check out my podcast, Hypothetical. On Hypothetical, we tell speculative sci-fi stories interwoven with real science. New episodes every Tuesday, available wherever you get podcasts.
So your book starts out with Battle of the Sexes, and that's something, talk about repressing things. I definitely watched every episode of both of those Battle of the Sexes, totally forgot it existed. And when I opened the book, I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, I forgot about this. And it was a little bit traumatic, I gotta say, to remember just how unfortunate those seasons were and how angry it made me to watch and be like, why are you doing this, women? Like, why are you doing this to our entire gender? You're fucking us over.
But then you just, like, couldn't stop watching. Yeah, so MTV's Battle of the Sexes. So that is two seasons of The Challenge in, like, 2003 or 2004, I think.
Back when it used to be Real World Road Rules.
Real World Road Rules Challenge. Now it is just The Challenge.
Yep.
Where they split it up, men and women, and like, so, you know, it's like the idea is to figure out which sex is better. And the men spank the women in both seasons.
Oh, my
God. Like, it is not just, like, absolutely destroy the women. And it is disheartening. But, like, I think, I watched it at, you know, I was, like, in 7th and 8th grade at the time. And I think there's something really, and you know, at that age, like I didn't think I was queer. Like that wasn't really on my radar at all. But I think, you know, but I had been like such a tomboy growing up, and I was in this transition period of, you know, going through puberty and starting to have like more like groups of girlfriends and become, you know, developing just like more intimate friendships with women, girls, fellow 7th graders, not adult women. And so I think that like, I was so drawn to that show because it offered this very, this on a platter was just like, this is the way that men are and this is the way that women are. Like, right. And there's something about that binary at the time that was like, as somebody who honestly didn't really feel like I fit into it in a way that like I saw some of my friends doing, that was really like appealing to me, that it like offered some kind of false guidance. Yeah, there was like, I think when you're like, I'm a queer kid, the gender binary, let's like latch on to that because it's safe and less scary feeling, you know, which is sad.
Yeah.
I think that's what was happening with me.
Yeah. I mean, I remembered having this feeling of, it's like, I want the women to win because I'm also a woman, but the guys are obviously so much better at this and the women are doing stupid things and getting in their own way that it was almost making me root for the men because I could only identify or really cheer for two women ever. It'd be like, you know, Ruthie.
It's literally just
Ruthie. It's just Ruthie. Ruthie. Yeah.
Ruthie was carrying that
my Ruth.
Yeah,
Ruthie's
and you're
amazing.
Like, if, right.
Ruthie is
that was
big
my big Ruth.
Also,
right.
Ruthie is like, back on the current season and like got a haircut and she looks fucking great. Oh yeah, she's got like a major dyke chop now. It's awesome. It was like, not only was it like, it wasn't just like men are stronger and they're better at like the physical challenges or something like that. It was literally just like the women were fulfilling the stereotype of being like, so like that, you know, bullshit stereotype, obviously, of being like over emotional and
catty.
voting people off cattiness, like bitchiness. They're just like getting in like drunk fights all the time. And it's like, ladies, don't do that.
Yeah.
You're making us all look bad.
Yeah.
So, you know, ultimately, I don't think that show accomplished perhaps what the producers were hoping it would accomplish. Or maybe it did.
Or maybe it
I
did.
Know. I don't know who was behind it.
It's just so funny.
Puck. No.
Puck. Oh, my God. I love that we were watching these, like, horny early 20-somethings on MTV's like Real World Rules challenges, but also Disney Channel original movies at the same time. Just like I don't know about you, was like desperately like I was getting all freaked out by like how sexual things were getting on MTV, and I would retreat back to Disney Channel and I'd be like, I'm safe here. And I'd be like, wait a minute, I'm not. This is queer as hell. Like the motocross, the Cadet Kelly. You talked about my go-to queer Disney films. We'll call them films.
Yeah, totally. I mean, motocross is wild. Like, because it's like, I didn't realize this, obviously, at the time that I watched it. I only found it out in you know, doing a little research for the book. But it's supposed to be a take on Twelfth Night.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
I'm just like, oh.
Wait, we had Never Been Kissed just like, for that, right? Or no, we had, Taming of the,
She's the Man.
Oh my God, I have them all mixed up right now.
No.
Was 10 Things I Hate About You.
Taming of the Shrew was 10 Things I Hate About You. Clueless was Emma. But motocross was supposed to be Twelfth Night, as was She's the Man. Ultimately, I think She's the Man was probably more successful.
Both queer as hell.
As a film. Both queer as hell. She's the Man, I weirdly didn't... Maybe, you know, it might have been a thing where I was like, this is queer. I am not going to process this, and I'm going to put it in a box in my head and just forget about it and whatever. Like, it might have been that for me. But for some reason, She's the Man, I just, like, didn't latch onto in a way that, like, I feel like a lot of people our age did.
Oh, just there's a show in Brooklyn, or there was before the pandemic, called Queer Film Theory, where you take a movie or show and you prove its queer subtext. And it was like, as long as you haven't done a movie that's been done before. And I would look at the list, the show producers would send out, and everything had been done before. So I had to do She's the Man just because everything had been taken, because I wanted to do motocross.
Oh my God.
And then I showed up for the show, and it was me and two other comedians. One of them did Cadet Kelly. So I got to do my She's the Man.
Oh my God.
And then someone went beautifully into just the sexual tension, the like BDSM almost relationship between Christy Carlson Romano and Hilary Duff, which you beautifully write about.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Your whole book is so validating.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. I'm so glad.
Like, we're all thinking, I didn't know we were like... all feeling this, though we must have been. But sorry, yeah, we were talking about motocross.
That's so nice.
Had no idea it was supposed to be 12.
Yeah, that was my major takeaway. The other crazy thing about motocross to me, okay, so it's obviously like a girl is taking the place of her twin brother in this motocross competition, mm-hmm. and both of their names are Andy.
Yeah,
like don't name both of your children Andy if you don't want them to replace each other in some way. It is so weird that they named their twins the same name. That was my big takeaway.
Yeah.
Nothing about gender, just like weird parenting
weird choices
from these like motocross parents, which I guess I don't know any motocross parents, so maybe it's a thing, but
it's crazy to me that I'm just a few years older than you two. I missed all those Disney movies. I missed everything,
because like once you're out of Disney Channel movies, like, you're out.
Yeah,
like,
I only had an older sister
hear about them,
right?
Yeah,
right.
There you go.
I feel like if you had a younger sister,
I did.
Yeah, then
so I could hold on.
Yeah, yeah,
and watch High School Musical.
In. Right, right.
I'd say I was a year too old for that.
Yeah,
I was definitely too old for High School Musical, but I did watch
Same.
It.
Yeah,
okay. I did. The only time I've ever rear-ended someone is when I was in high school, blaring High School Musical in my car.
It was.
I think that's what it was. Yeah, It wasn't bad. It was like stop and go traffic. It wasn't a big deal. But I was like, this is humiliating for me.
That's so funny. Just in a very aughts fashion, I too was in the car with my friend. We rear-ended someone scream singing to Imogen. Just to put that out there while we're taking this trip down memory lane.
Man.
For me, it was Simple Plan.
Oh, wow. Really good.
See.
Yeah, that is the one. That's like the one like area that I wished I had gotten. I had like touched more in this book was like Blink-182 was very important to me. And I think like Simple Plan, like all of that like early 2000s, like pop punk stuff.
Yes.
It was all these like, it's like a very, and like, it's like a very sexist genre.
It is.
Right.
And again, me being drawn to sexism, I guess, as a child,
right.
like that was something that I wish I had dug into. And so I'm like, oh, maybe I'll like write something else about that. But like,
yeah, I'm like, can you please? Cause you're just processing for me at this point.
Yeah. I'm going to do all of your processing yeah. for you.
Cause
yeah.
I went to an emo night actually. It was marketed as that. It was a pop punk night ultimately. In Austin, Texas last weekend, it was a emo or pop punk cover band called Y'all Out Boy. And
very fun.
So fun. They played all the old, like Dashboard Confessional, like Brand New, all those songs, Yellow Card. And I was so excited. I was feeling so nostalgic. My friends and I were scream singing along. And like in that moment, I realized how sexist everything was. I'm telling you, I haven't processed right. anything from the odds.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
And then you I just gotta, got a little gotta... sad.
You got to get your CD wallet back and really yeah. do some flipping through those pages again.
Right.
Yeah. And I remember also thinking, and maybe this was like partially like hanging around with my brother's friends and kind of absorbing the sort of things that they were saying, which who are like mostly boys. But like, I remember when Avril Lavigne came out, like this idea was like, oh, she's a poser, which I guess is, I mean, right, you can say right. that because she was like because she was so pop, like she was immediately like MTV, et cetera.
Mm-hmm,
like
right.
you can say that she,
but so was Simple Plan or like,
so was Simple Plan. You know, like, so was like Sum 41, like whatever.
Oh, that's the one I was
like
thinking
a very
of.
Popular. Yeah. It was like a very popular genre at the time. So, and now I'm like, oh no, that was just a lot of sexism. Yeah. So.
Right. I often wonder how I went from being into mostly female musicians to just a hardcore with my friends going to like every pop punk show that came in through town. And sometimes I wonder, was that the only way at that point that I could relate to those friends that I threw myself into it? Because yeah. I wasn't relating to any of their guy stuff, their guy drama, their boyfriends, whatever. But I was like, but we can all go see Good Charlotte 6 times a year. And like, I know yeah. we all feel the same about this. And like, I yeah. can still have a crush on Joel, you know, and it's harmless. And then you guys think I'm normal. Like, this is great.
It's a win-win.
Right.
Going to Good Charlotte concerts. Yeah.
Yeah. Even yeah. though it was so sexist, man.
Yeah. And it was it's this thing of just like men not being able to like process their feelings. And
right.
so they like start an emo, a scream out.
I mean, they're right. grown men.
Screaming about like how, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And like grown men, they're 24. So like.
Right.
But like still like too grown to be like, I mean, like Brand New lyrics. And it turns out that guy was like, you know.
Yeah.
Grooming minors,
right.
I think.
Right.
I
right.
God. That. But like their lyrics are like murderous, like it's crazy. And meanwhile, I'm just like screaming along to it in the car.
Right.
Like, yeah, I hope you fly through the windshield, you stupid
right.
bitch.
Yeah.
But I'm like, somehow this is like affirming me in some way. And I don't right. know how. And that's something I need to explore.
Yes, please do.
Yeah, please.
Was there anything else that didn't make the book in terms of topics where you're like, there's something here, but I only have this much mm-hmm. room?
No, there was nothing. Well, you know, it's kind of baked into the premise of the book is the idea that like I'm going to have missed things, right? Like I was really specific about like when I wrote it to be like I'm going to consider the things the pieces of entertainment that like I actually ingested and like was into as a kid in this era. So there's definitely, and so there's some moments where I'm kind of like I don't talk about, I think I mention like things like the Britney Madonna kiss and
yeah.
like the and like Tattoo, who like Tattoo have been like coming up in like the media or like there was some like news story about how they're like, we hate gay people. I don't
yeah,
know.
No, one yeah. of them. One of them is like seriously homophobic.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not. It's Tattoo's not good. But I do think that like I with those things, again, like those like queer moments that I did, like those like, outwardly like, you know, lesbian moments on MTV, like whatever. I did a very good job of being like, this doesn't apply to me, putting it in a box, putting it somewhere in
right.
the back of my brain and not unpacking this until a long time. So like, ultimately I don't have a lot to say about those moments, you know, like, because I think I just like did a really good job of compartmentalizing them. Like, I'm sure there are lots of people who have like awesome takes and really fun you know, books that they can write about how Britney and Madonna, like, fucked them up or whatever. Yeah, it's like, I think, like, the shows and the movies and the, you know, books and whatever that really got through to me were the ones that just seemed straight. So I was like, okay, this is safe. And I can, like, watch this and try to have a crush on Seth Cohen and try to, you know, things that fall into the, you know, that have, like, the trappings of heterosexuality. Like, right. I'm like, okay, this is safe. I can take this in. And then, you know, of course there's going to be, of course, because, like, I was queer and I was, like, a part of me was, like reaching for queer content, but, like, subconsciously, like, I'm going to take in little bits and pieces of these different pieces of entertainment and kind of hold them really close to me and let them shape my personality and my aesthetics, my tastes and, like, whatever. And, like, not really be sure why as it's happening. But I guess, like, that is a long answer to saying, I don't really think there's anything else in the book that, like, I think that I really was
all, like, the important stuff to you is, like, in there.
Yeah,
I think so. The biggest things are in there.
Yeah. Okay, let's move to the L word. I was dying reading the excerpts. Yeah, let's talk about the L word again. reading the excerpts of the reviews from when it came out. That's something that I realized I had never done. I wasn't going to read I was just going to watch it. Like, when it came out, I'm like, okay, I'm watching this. So to see those excerpts, it's really funny.
the New Yorker calling the L word, quote, truly idiotic.
Yes.
Is like, I want a tattoo of that. Yes. Like, it is so vicious and so accurate. And, like, moments of it are truly idiotic. Incredible. Yeah, it was, I think I did that a lot with, I was going back and looking at, like, reading reviews from, like, from the times that, like, a lot of the shows that I was writing about came out. And with the L word, it was really interesting. I think I also was really fascinated by there was, like, a New York Mag review, you know, so when did it premiere? Like, 2003, 2004?
Yeah. The end of 2003. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that there was a lot of, and I also talk about this in the book, but, like, there was a lot of, you know, jokes about lesbians being like everyone's in flannel wearing Birkenstocks, like, being gross and bad at things. I don't know.
Right.
Like, it was a very, like, panning the stereotype, panning butch women basically.
Yeah.
And, like, in a way that's like, why are you doing that? That's mean. But, like, so this New York Mag review was basically like, finally the L word is proving that, like, we're not all, like, these, like, gross man-hating, well, maybe man-hating, but, like, these, like, nasty, like, butch women, whatever. Like, so there was this weird, like, sense of it being, like, victorious because it, like, excluded butches.
Right.
Right.
You know, in this weird way that was, like making fun of lesbians at that time equals making fun of butch lesbians.
Right.
And so then it was, like, I feel, it sounded like there was just this, from what I was gathering from reading those old pieces, was this sense from like, femmes, and that was, like, we, or just, like, non-butches, really, that, like, we're taking the reins on what being a lesbian means. Like, it was some kind of triumph, when really
right.
it was just, like, no, this is just, like, a new kind of being bad, you know?
Right, right.
And a new kind of, like, excluding people from your community and a new way of, like, shitting on people. Like, yeah. So those early interviews were definitely a trip.
You brought up some things that I've even forgot about, even though I kind of recently rewatched a lot of it. But we always talk about how they just forgot or ignored or changed their mind about Alice being bisexual. But
wild.
But the part of her being with Dana and them seeing Tina get dressed up and Alice says, mm-hmm. What is it? You are right. Being bisexual is disgusting. Like,
yeah.
That she literally says that.
She literally says it.
I forgot about
just,
that.
Like,
I forgot about that.
They were
too.
Just like, we need to, like season one, Alice, like, is the bisexual. And
right.
That is,
and they,
like,
set it up so strong.
Mm-hmm.
And they set it up really strong. And they're like, this is a thing we're going to explore. Like, this is also a valid, like, whatever.
Right.
I mean, they do a bad job of that. But then, yeah, they really drop kick it. And it's weird. What's also bad about that is that, like Dana always, like, shat on Alice for being bisexual. And so I think that that like scene, especially with like Dana in the hospital, is like sort of supposed to be in a way like a sort of putting a bow on that argument for them and being like, you were right, Dana. Like, now that you're dying, I'm going to give you the gift of not being bisexual anymore.
Right, like,
which is, it's like kind of meant to be this like kind of nice moment between the two of them, I think, which is just like so
well
mean.
You speak, you speak honest truths in these intimate moments, like on someone's deathbed in a hospital.
Yeah.
And that was
right,
the,
yeah,
the truth that they let get displayed for us queer women. Being
yeah
bisexual
yeah
is disgusting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. It was, it's, it was, and then they just never speak about it again.
Right.
Yeah, that was, that's the L word.
That's it.
You're not great with bisexual women.
You also, in the book, call the concept of nipple confidence untrue. Let's unpack that. You don't believe it's a thing?
I don't think it's a thing. Do you think it's a thing?
I don't know. I guess I never had strong feelings about it, but you're like, untrue. I'm like, do people believe it's a thing? I mean,
maybe
Carolyn
I'm
goes
wrong
and bombs her next show because of this.
It did make me think.
Okay,
I remember when they had the line, because I was like, oh, I don't have confidence in my nipples. Like, is that my problem? Like, do I need to feel
right
more like, I've just, they're just kind of there. I haven't thought much about them. And then it kind of got into my head, the idea of nipple confidence.
To me, no, I don't think, maybe now it is a thing because it was, like, created by the L word. But,
yeah,
like, to me, that reads as, like, trying to equate nipple confidence to being, like, big dick confidence, basically.
Yeah.
And it's like putting queer women in the same context as the same context of the same like framework as men or of like heterosexuality.
Right.
It's,
right.
It's like trying to use those same trappings to be like, oh no, it's just like, we're the same. We just like, we have our own thing. Like, instead of big dicks, like, we're obsessed with like nipple confidence, which like I've never, as an adult queer woman, had a conversation with anyone regarding
this.
Nipple
this would be the
right
first, yeah,
right.
Outside
yes
of the context of the L word
of right
like,
now,
I mean, like nipple confidence. Yeah,
yeah. Also, I guess if Shane had nipple confidence, she wouldn't have worn that vest that only covered her nipples and nothing
that's
else.
True, that's
right?
The iconic terrible vest. Yeah.
I could do this all day,
right?
And I do a lot of days.
With the reviews, was that the New Yorker one the most scathing one? Or what was your favorite one to read? Which one should I Google and read in full and get a good laugh?
I mean, the New Yorker one is, it's not like scathing top to bottom, I don't think.
Yeah.
Like, that line in particular was really good. but I think there's like a New York Times one that is basically just like, oh, this is obviously made for straight men. And, which I think I also mentioned in the book, I can't remember, but, and it's nice to see there are some of those takes out there too, of people being like, oh no, this is clearly basically just like softcore porn for men. And like, or there's like the number of sex scenes are so egregious that like, clearly you're just trying to get men to watch this show, you know?
That was something I was thinking about though, because I felt like that was kind of desexualizing lesbians, like, oh, lesbians or women couldn't possibly want to watch women naked and having sex with each other.
Sure,
so
sure,
this
sure
is for men. So that was kind of how I interpreted that, because I remember being
yeah
very excited about how much sex there was in the L word when I was first
oh
watching it.
Absolutely. And like, maybe, yeah, like, I mean, like, clearly that is a reason, and I write about that in the book, like, that's what brought me to the L word.
Right, right,
like,
right.
That's,
yeah,
that's what I showed up for sure. But I don't know, man, there's just so much, like, at a
right
certain point, like, I'm just like, this is so boring.
No,
like,
you're right.
You need to stop having sex all the time. Like, I don't know, to me it just reads as a, like, we gotta make sure we're bringing people in,
yeah,
who, besides, like, besides lesbians.
Also, like,
know,
stagger the orgasms. Like, you know, just,
yeah,
know,
right, right, right.
Not always in tandem.
Right, right.
And that's a truth we have to live by. Yeah.
Right. I think I felt that more with Gen Q than I did with the original one. And maybe it is that I was in such a different point in my life. But with Gen Q, I was like, all right, another L word sex scene, except for the GG
they open
one
it.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that they open it with a... Yeah, and I'm like, oh, they're up to their old tricks, because after a while, yeah, it becomes such a thing on the show. And
is it just that like on Gen Q, like it's the same rate of fucks per episode?
Yeah, I almost felt like maybe even more. I don't know. They try to pack so much into
too much
Gen Q, and kind of to your point in the essay, it's like the whole reason we watch it is just to all have that one common language that we can talk to and reference when we meet people, or like me and Melody the other night when our mic doesn't work when we're hosting an event. just go into L-word banter
and it worked,
figuring out the audio.
I cannot tell you like the number of bad Tinder dates I've gone on where it's just like, just start talking about the L word and like you'll feel like you're having a conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
It feels like you're connecting about something. Yes. And like really you're just like going through the things.
Right.
Who are you? Who do you hate? Who do you love? Like whatever. And it's like, and I think that in a real way, that is a thing that like, I would never make the argument that like all, you know, millennial queer women, you know, American women like love the L word. Like clearly, all have our, it is more that like, even if you haven't watched it, everyone, you have an opinion on it.
Yes.
You have your hot takes, you have your, you know, the things that like, make you laugh the most. And like that in itself, like the fact that you can just kind of bring up, you know, Bette Porter fucking a carpenter in a jail cell to like most women who are gay of a certain age is like kind of wild. And like, I don't think really quite exists in the same way with other groups. Like I'm obviously speaking from my own experience and would love to hear if there was like another one, but like, I kind of, you know, the L word is strong. Brand is strong.
The brand is strong. I haven't felt something quite like it until Portrait of a Lady on Fire came out. And that wasn't that was a fraction of that. But yeah.
I mean, it's like one of those things that's like so fun because like everyone sees it. Everyone's talking about it.
Yeah.
Right.
But not like a recurring cultural touchstone that like spans years that just like we all watch. And it's a good thing, I guess, that because that meant we only had one thing. And it was like a one size fits all, but actually not most. And we have good TV now.
Right.
Now TV's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Now we've got Mare. Now we've got Mare's terrible gay daughter.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on today's pop culture landscape influencing coming out now, since it's drastically different?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I will preface this by saying that I don't have a lot of tween friends in my life. But I,
bless.
My sense is that
you're not a member of a boy punk band hanging out with high school.
God, girls. No, I'm not. What's his name from Brand New?
Yeah.
I will say, you know, so my sense is that kids are just coming out way younger now. And I think there are studies that prove that.
Yes.
And like, certainly, you know, there's a lot of kids who are like coming out as trans and non-binary at a really young age, which is awesome. You know, I can't like point to the research that proves it or anything, but like, it seems like, you know, when you have more gay characters in the entertainment you're consuming, it just kind of puts that little like question mark in your head where you're kind of like, oh, I like this. I'm drawn to this. What's that about? You know, like, and I, you know, this is the premise of my entire book, but like, didn't really have any gay characters that I looked for, you know? And I just remember by the time that like, when Glee came out, I was in college and, you know, kind of like hate watched it, but then like, kept watching it, you know? And I remember even, I was like 20 or whatever, but I was almost like mad because I was like, I wish this had come out when I was in high school.
I was really jealous.
Like, I wish that this had been on when I was 14 and that all my friends were watching it and we were talking about it. And there would just be like a gateway to having the conversation. And so just like the plethora of gay shows, you know, gay characters out there now, it just seems like that little opening is available to a lot more people at a younger age.
Yeah. And it's a lot easier for them, too, to signal to each other based on interests or, like, even on TikTok with Girl in Red. Like, there's so much more shared language there, where I remember knowing that this coworker of mine, my first girlfriend, I knew that she was gay in this movie theater we worked at. But I'm like, how do I communicate to her that I also might be gay? Do I talk about Rosie O'Donnell? Like, I don't know what else. And it's like, I knew it from her because she was like obsessed with Angelina Jolie in a way
that
was like,
that's how I knew my high school crush was gay.
Yeah.
That's another, I should have talked more about Angelina Jolie in this book. I could really use some, I was just like, yes, Girl Interrupted, very sexy movie.
Yeah.
Actually, like, what is wrong with me? Yeah, no, I think you're so right. I think there's just like, you know, in the way that like the L word is this sort of common language among women of a certain age, like I think that there are just more of those common languages that are popping up and that kids are, you know, able to sort of bond over or, you know, whatever, code to each other.
Right.
You know, yeah, I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, I think they're just actually distinguishing whether or not they're straight at this point. I really.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Through gender reveals.
God bless.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So your book is out now.
It is. It's out now. You can get it at your local independent bookseller. You can order on Amazon if you must. Those are the places. It's most places, I think, currently. So go out and buy it.
Is there anything that we didn't cover that you want to mention that we get into? Like, you do talk about Harry Potter.
We didn't even ask about that.
Yeah.
They'll just have to read it.
I mean, they'll just have to read it. You guys will have to read. You'll have to see the therapy that we're all going through together via my book.
Right.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that we covered a lot of ground. It's hard to cover all of it so in an hour. So,
right.
Which is why the book exists. So there you
go. We tried to cover the queer aughts in an hour. We made some progress. Yeah. Where can people follow you on social media?
You can follow me on Twitter at Perry Jetem. It's a pun.
I love it.
Oh, we love that.
I love it.
Okay. I don't think I've said it out loud in about 10 years either. So now I'm like, it is Perry Jetem. and then on Instagram, I'm Muppet Baby. Muppet2_baby. I should also probably change that to make it easier, but that's my truth. You can just search Grace Perry and I'll show up somehow. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you so much for talking with us, Grace.
Yeah, this is so much fun. I truly like I could blab about this shit forever. Yeah. So
us too.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It's such an honor to dyke out with you two.
Our pleasure.
Thank you. What do you think, Melody? Are we gonna have Grace on in a year to dyke out about surfing?
I hope so. And at the very least, definitely the gay 2010s. I need that follow-up as we rounded out the decade.
Way to position yourself to have a sequel to your book.
I just need Grace to process all of that for me. You know, I repressed so much of the aughts and learned a lot about myself from reading the book. I cannot recommend it enough for queer millennials.
If the 2000s made me gay, did the 2010s make me straight?
Mm.
Like, what's the follow-up, you know? Or,
yeah.
The 2010s made me more gay.
The 2010s, once we hit 2016, baby, I got so much more gay. Last time I slept with a man, for sure. The political twist of 2016, yeah.
Yeah, nothing
got a lot
like
more gay.
Lean into... Puss more, right?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I leaned all the way in.
Oh, don't let me talk anymore. Get to the listener question, please.
All right. So, I'm a high school student. I recently went through my first real breakup with a girl who I really cared about and still care about. We got together during the pandemic. This meant that we couldn't touch, especially since my parents are both high risk. So we were basically in a long distance relationship, even though we only lived a few minutes from each other. This eventually took a heavy toll on our relationship, and she broke up with me because of it. I feel terrible, but I understand where she was coming from. I really miss her. The relationship got so emotional so quickly. Part of me wants to get back together so badly, especially since it'll be safe soon with the vaccine, but I know it wouldn't be the right thing to do. What is your advice on getting over someone who you really care about? P.S. How is Sarah McLachlan not gay? I'm very confused. Please explain. What about Adia?
I was tempted to just have the last part be the question. Be like, the first one you can figure it on your own. Let's really dive into Sarah McLachlan. Yeah. I don't know how she's not gay. Adia, I'm convinced, is a gay anthem. In it is the line, there's no one left to finger after Adia.
Really?
Lisa, yeah, there's no one left to finger. There's no one here to blame. There's no one left to talk to, honey.
Honey. Hon.
I hope I didn't just butcher the lyrics, but I know that there's no one left to finger. And it's a gay song. It's about her friend, Adia. It's about a friendship, apparently, but it sounds really gay.
And she looks really gay. And
Lilith Fair and all yeah. that. So I'm going to say that she is queer and keeps it to herself.
Yeah.
Okay, the other question.
All right, so now we cleared that up. All right. How do you get over someone you really care about?
I'm tempted to say you don't have to. I know it's high school and you have a lot of relationships ahead of you, but if the main problem in this relationship really was just not being able to see each other during the pandemic, that's like a very situational thing. So if you're vaccinated and your parents are fine and it's safer to be together and you both really like each other and still care for each other and she's up for it, I don't think that this is definitely
yeah this is coming from
dead in the water
people who always say next and right, encourage right. you all to just block and cut contact and move on, but we are saying in this case it might not be over. You never got the chance to see what it really would be.
Exactly. It didn't get its fair shot.
Yeah.
I think that, wow, this is really crazy. It's the first time we're giving this advice because normally this question on its own of getting over someone you really care about is cut off all contact, unfollow on social media, steer away, listen to next week's episode where we'll have more on that. Mm-hmm. But with this, you know, maybe give it another go and hopefully that there isn't too much baggage from whatever fights you had the first time around that were really caused by this crazy circumstance that changed everybody's world. But if there's a way that you can make it work now and you have a connection, I don't know.
Check in.
You're in high school. Now is the time for like a romantic gesture, like a fun.
Get that fucking boombox up. In the air.
Yeah. Do it. Like, go window. Crazy. Make a move. What's the worst that can happen?
Yeah, go for
Heartbreak?
It.
Heartbreak?
Yeah.
That's okay.
That's what.
Get your heart broken. Like, that's what these years are for.
I wish I got my heart broken in high school. More.
Yeah.
I wish I took risks.
You know, if you don't go for it, you're always going to wonder what could have been because you never had the chance to really see what could have been. So we're going to prescribe you a grand romantic gesture to win her back.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
And then we'll give you advice if this goes very south, just in case.
Yes. if
we'll
this
move
does
your
not
question
work,
to the top of the pile and yes. we'll reevaluate from there. Okay.
Perfect. So let us know. Tell us what happens and how it goes. But get creative, make a gesture, and best of luck to you. And we hope there's a lot of love in your future.
Mm-hmm. Summer loving. Would love to see it.
If you have a question for us, send it to dykingout@gmail.com. We love them. We can't get enough of them. Also, if you are a patron, you can get to the top of the list. And if you're a patron, you can listen to our extra episodes that we put out every week. This week, we talked about
FOMO. We talked about
the
pride.
Real L word.
Real L word.
In detail. Brooklyn Pride. Talked about the other things that were making my life miserable this week mm-hmm. that weren't raccoons. Really uplifting, fun stuff from your favorite co-hosts at Dyking Out. So go over to patreon.com/dykingout. You can follow us on social media everywhere at Dyking Out. And you can follow me at TGI Carolyn.
And you can follow me at Melody Kamali.
Thank you so much for diking out with us during this crazy Pride Month.
Stay hydrated, be safe out there, and we'll see you all next Tuesday.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.